Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
Now, it is 10 years to the day since the death of Alan Rickman, a giant of stage and screen. He played some of the greatest villains: Snape, Hans Gruber, the Sheriff of Nottingham, and Damon De Valera. His range meant he could do light and depth as well. He was a hit in comedy films. He could do a musical. And he was also a fascinating man. He had diaries published years after his death, sometimes very catty, but often showing that he was very, very serious about the craft and the industry that he was in. He was also fiercely political. Joining us is our screen queen, Olivia Fahey, back again. You actually met Alan Rickman, isn't that right?
I did, when he was here for A Little Chaos at the Dublin International Film Festival 2015. I want to say it was
the year before he died,
literally just before he passed away.
He directed that film.
He did, and he was starring in it as well as the king. So it was a very poignant time for him. He was like dying to do more like directing work, and he'd been hoping to do more over the years. He actually only ended up directing two films throughout his career,
right?
And so this one meant a lot to him, so he was excited to see like what was going to be the reaction to it. And I just happened to run into him as he'd arrived into Cineworld, and we were in the bar. I had gone out to try and buy a surprise present for one of the girls on behalf of the venue manager that year. And I was trying to hide and be like, okay, Leah can't see me, but where is John? And then suddenly I end up running into Alan Rickman and had a little chat with him and stuff. I had a little chat. Like, oh, how's it going? Like, good to see you. Like, are you looking forward to later on? He was preparing for the media line with all the journalists and things like that. And then I actually happened to be up with some friends who were on the media line later on. And when he clocked me, he was just like, oh, hello. And I was like, hi again.
Did so. Really?
Yeah, I was like, I was really, really touched. Like, I was such a big fan as well. And I was like, be cool, be cool. So like, I held it together, like just about. But yeah, no, he
That's
was really,
memory.
Really lovely.
Because famously, Emma Thompson, his great friend, said that people were afraid to approach him, even actors in the industry who'd been in films with him. They found him kind of fearsome.
Yes, and I think because also he had such an air of like professionalism about him as well.
Yeah.
So like, even on the film Dogma, Jason Mewes had been told that he had to be on his best behaviour because, you know, Alan Rickman is coming in, and he's coming from the theatre world. So he was so petrified of not wanting to annoy him that he went off and he learned the entire script so he would be prepared for when they went into rehearsals, so as not to annoy Alan Rickman. I was like, brilliant. That is so, like that's exactly what you do, because you don't want to be the person to annoy Alan Rickman,
One of his comedy roles as well. He was fearsome because of all the villains he played, basically.
Yes.
But he was kind of a scary character. That voice of his is just extraordinary.
It was so iconic, and like, even people trying to imitate it, they still, like, they get very close to like the capturing the essence of it, but there was just some little like menaceness in it that only he could do, and it was just, oh, it's so brilliant. I can't believe it's been 10 years. Like, it's quite heartbreaking to think it's been that long.
And he was 69, so he would have definitely been still acting. The Guardian obituary described him as a star whose arch features and languid diction recognisable across the generations. That's a really good description of it, isn't it? We talk about the most famous role, which is Professor Snape in the Harry. This is a 10-year project for him, which
was
unusual for such an austere theatre actor to take on.
Yes, and when you think about it, like with the likes of like the actors who signed up for Lord of the Rings, like they signed on for like a 3-year, like you film everything back to back to back and then you're done. Whereas with this, it was basically a 10-year commitment. And you know, with actors of like, especially because like Richard Harris, he only actually ended up doing the first two films before he passed away. And Alan was actually diagnosed with his cancer diagnosis halfway through filming.
We
only know this in hindsight. Yes, he kept it completely secret, and he was going through therapy, and he was wondering like, would I continue on as Professor Snape? And then he decided, no, you need to see this story through. And I think also, especially because he knew more about Snape's story than anybody did, even the directors, who he would be making all of these decisions and of character choices, and they'd be like, would you mind doing it like another way? And he'd be like, no, trust me, this is how we're going to do it. Because JK had filled him in on what Snape's overarching storyline was going to be.
The ambiguity of the character. There's a trend at the moment on TikTok where people have put little cloaks on their pets. Have you seen it? Because Snape always makes a wonderful entrance with a swishing cape.
Oh, he does.
So let's go back into this world.
There will be no foolish wand waving or silly incantations in this class. As such, I don't expect many of you to appreciate the subtle science and exact art that is potion making. However, for those select few who possess the predisposition,
I can teach you how to bewitch the mind and ensnare the senses. I can tell you how to bottle fame, brew glory, and even put a stopper in death.
God, if you didn't know that was a kid's film.
And I'm here like mouthing the words along as well. I know that monologue so well. It's so iconic because it's the first introduction, like properly, of Snape in the film. And it's so important because it's like the anchor of like what we're to expect of him throughout the franchise, right up until we discover what his actual true sense was.
Did you read the diaries, the Alan Rickman diaries?
Do you know, I haven't. I've read like a couple of like snippets of them over the years, just from like other articles that have come out, and they've been like referencing them. And it's like, I do need to like sit down and read them. But also, my little heart, because he was such an icon that I think it kind of it would break my heart a little bit as well.
He's elevated even more.
Oh, brilliant.
He has all these little scathing references to Bad Place, you see. And even the kids in the Harry Potter, he doesn't think they can act very well. He thinks Daniel Radcliffe is going to be a director. And Emily Watson is Hermione. Her accent is somewhere out by Albania at one stage. That's what he famously said.
I love it.
Die Hard. Is this the kind of film that makes him an international star everywhere?
Yes.
Truly, Madly, Deeply, which we'll come to, kind of lands him as a film star out of the stage. But it's Die Hard. Even he talks about the fact that he picks up the script and goes, what am I doing in an action film?
Honestly, yes.
Makes no sense.
He really had no kind of interest, but the director had seen him in the Broadway production of, and I'm going to make sure that I get this right, Les Liaisons Dangereuses. So basically what became Dangerous Liaisons, the movie.
Yeah.
It was a staged play first. And the director had seen him in that and he's like, that's who I want for Hans Gruber. So he actually hadn't done a lot of film work up until that point. He'd done some like British television and things like that, but this was his like break into Hollywood. So he was convinced by his team to be like, no, I really think you need to do this. And he was actually convinced by the script. He was like, this is a really strong story, and decided to go and do it. And as much as he was a bit miffed when they really did drop him for that final scene, he knew he was going to be dropped, but they were doing like a countdown and they dropped him early to try and capture that shocked look on his face. And he was really, really miffed about that at the time. But apparently he did get over it eventually. But it literally catapulted him to kind of superstardom, because everyone loved that film and still love that film.
Do you
film.
Know the note he added to the director? Because he's supposed to dress like all the other terrorists taking over the building. And he says, no, this guy should be in a suit. And the director's really miffed, but then he changes it for him anyway. I mean, it would have been completely different.
So
when Alexander saw the breadth of his domain, he wept, for there were no more worlds to conquer. Benefits of a classical education.
Sorry, I wasn't expecting the dance music in there. That was 1988. Another of his brilliant villains, the Sheriff of Nottingham, in an otherwise absurd film.
Oh my goodness.
With Kevin Costner as an American Robin Hood.
Yeah.
But all I remember is, only remember Alan Rickman.
Honestly, and I think like it's become one of those films that like people will watch on like bad movie nights. It's a great one to sit down, because it is kind of like Sheriff Nottingham, he's such like a panto villain almost, but it works because of the way that Rickman has done it. And apparently he sat down and he was like, this script is really underwhelming, I'm really not into this. And he turned around and he was like, I know, I'm going to work on this. And he worked on it with Ruby Wax. And they became best friends, and they actually kind of put a lot of the comedic elements into it that have become so iconic to this day. And it's like those one-liners, oh my goodness, they are iconic.
Robin Hood steals money from my pocket, forcing me to hurt the public, and they love him for it?
Yes. That's it.
Cancel the kitchen scraps for lepers and orphans. No more merciful beheadings. And call off Christmas.
Oh, that's my favourite.
I love that. No more merciful beheadings. I was like, when are beheadings merciful?
He slides into the room all the time, doesn't he? I mean, it's so over the top.
Oh, it's so, so brilliant. And I just love how, like, that was all him. Like, that was his input. He made sure that that character was going to be iconic. And oh boy, was it.
A couple of years later then, he's doing something entirely different with his friend Emma Thompson, who wrote the screenplay for Sense and Sensibility.
Yes.
But he's playing this nice, respectable character of integrity, the Colonel.
The Colonel. And honestly, I think this was It was quite a surprise when I think he was cast originally, but it really suited him down to the ground. And it was like, I think it was the first time he and Emma worked together on screen.
Right.
And that was how they kind of like built up their rapport. They later went on to work together on his film, The Winter Guest. And then, of course, it famously in Love Actually as well. But their dynamic was really cool. And because the Colonel was such a straight-laced kind of character, he enjoyed kind of playing against the others there as well.
Right,
so
right.
It gave him a bit more to kind of play with as well. And he enjoyed that.
It was all part of his classic training. So he was a RADA graduate, wasn't
he? He is, yeah.
Threaded the boards. So this was right up there. The lovely Colonel Brandon.
What can I do?
Colonel, you have done so much already.
Give me an occupation, Miss Dashwood, or I shall run mad.
She would be easier if her mother were here.
Of course.
Incredible voice. He's able to play it completely straight.
He is. And you know what? The most surprising thing for me about that film is that it was directed by Ang Lee as well. And I was like, it just, for in my head, I know Ang Lee for some other out there films. So for him to have worked on Sense and Sensibility, it just doesn't match up in my head. But he did a fantastic job. And apparently he was very nervous about it. But Rickman was always like, no, no, this is one of the most faithful adaptations I have seen of, you know, Austin's work.
So nervous, Ang Lee would disappear down the field with a shooting for an hour,
yeah.
Eating buns, is what Alan Rickman said. And he'd have to give him the reassurance. It's going to be okay.
Yeah, don't worry, you've got this. It's grand.
Love Actually is a hugely famous film. I notice in his diaries, which I have at home, that he barely mentions Love Actually, which I deduce that he kind of poured scorn on the quality of the script. He talks so much about Michael Collins and coming to Ireland. He had Irish connections.
He did, yeah. And I think, especially with something like this, he felt a lot of like responsibility to make sure that they got it right. And even though the film and a lot of people were alluding to like, oh, like De Valera, you know, had a hand in Michael Collins' death. And he was like, I wouldn't have signed up for a film that directly said that because it's not true. And he was really like invested in making sure that De Valera wasn't made out to be the devil of Ireland kind of thing. And I think for someone of British, like notably a British actor playing one of the most iconic Irish like politicians in our history, and especially during such a pivotal moment of Irish history, I just thought it was such a daring move, but he did such a great job. Like, I actually think his performance was so spot on. And also, he oddly looked like him quite a bit.
He really does, yeah. And I think people slagged his accent at the time, but now, as watching clips in the last 2 days, he's kind of spot on in this weird diction that Eamon De Valera kind of invented for himself as a man of the people. The most remarkable thing is his first day on set is in front of 5,000
Dubliners,
Dubliners. It's his first time doing the most controversial speech, which is wading through Irish blood in the Civil War.
Yes.
And that was day one.
And honestly, like, you have to like, you get into his head, like, how nervous would you have been? And it's one of those things that, like,
quintessentially English actor.
Yeah, he said it was like, what was the word that he used to describe it? Alarming. He was like, it was a very alarming experience to sort of like jump into this, but it was one that he was insanely proud of. And I think, as you were saying, like, he mentions it in his diaries quite a bit. And that is like testament that he was just so proud of it. And I'm delighted as
He wanted more politics in the film rather than the action. But I presume the Hollywood side of things was pushing that.
Ah, yeah.
So he didn't sign up to a movie which would directly claim that De Valera had murdered Collins. There was an alternative ending shot.
There was a few different variations, but he very much was pushing towards what he kind of wanted, and he really fought hard for that. And, you know, I think it's a great testament to the relationship that he had with Neil Jordan as well, that he was able to do that. And, you know, the film is what we have now. And I think it was the right choice in the end.
Personally. Neil Jordan to do a directorial
director's cut
with the alternative ending. The best scenes in the movie, I think, are when Alan Rickman is opposite Liam Neeson. Mm-hmm. You've got the long fella and the big fella facing off against each other because the tension is palpable.
You published the terms without my agreement.
They were the best we could get.
In your opinion?
And what's more, Dave, you sent me there because you knew they were the best we could get.
That is idle speculation.
No, it's the truth. Otherwise, you would have gone yourself. I know it doesn't give us the Republic, but it gives us freedom to achieve the Republic peacefully. And surely it's time for peace.
What would you know about peace?
He just starts so such a height and then finishes on that really kind of almost whispered
And I think that, like,
put down,
that's the way, like, he, like, with theatre, you can, like, the way that he controls his voice and the tempo and the volume and things like that, like, that just shows how much of a control and experience that he had. Like, it was just, it was spot on.
The rest of that scene, he just says nothing.
He just sits there.
It's terrifying.
But like, yeah, exactly. It is absolutely terrifying because, like, even in saying nothing, he still, like, has a presence there, and that's, like, it's just a testament to his talent.
It's kind of amazing. He took risks as well because he has this unexpected comedy side to him, and he picked quite a few of them, didn't he? Again, for this austere theatre actor, Galaxy Quest is an amazing film.
Oh, so funny, and it was completely out of left field. You're like, hang on a minute, Alan Rickman is going to be starring in a film with Tim Allen about, like, a Star Trek spoof kind of thing. It just sounded so bizarre, but it worked. And he even said, he was like, he's not a big sci-fi fan, but he wanted to do it because the script was just so funny. And then also it kind of reflected on like a real life thing of, you know, all of these actors, especially theatre actors, will have like these career like dreams. And then what your actual career ends up being might be something completely different. And his character, of course, is battling with that. He's like, I'm a Shakespearean actor, but I'm also known for wearing this like weird alien head kind of thing. And, you know, there's actually a lot of Star Trek actors who have come from the Shakespearean kind of world as well. So it was actually really, really on the nose also. And I love actually Sigourney Weaver was talking about like remembering him on his 10th anniversary. Yeah. And she even said how like she saw him the November before he passed. And she was like, oh, isn't it great? We're going to be doing another Galaxy Quest. He was like, we'll see. And she didn't know it then, but of course, like 2 months later, he was gone. And it's so sad.
Because he was intensely private. He didn't do a celebrity thing at all.
Yeah.
In fact, he was dead before it was announced that he had married his partner, who they'd known since they were teenagers.
Yes, they'd been together for so long and like literally married in secret then just before he passed away. And in my opinion, I would say that was like once he kind of knew that it was a terminal condition, that he was probably kind of like, well, let's just make sure that everything legal is made easier for you in hindsight. Because, like, you know, you don't want to have to be worrying about all of these other things afterwards. But apparently he planned every single detail of his funeral. And someone even joked to say he wouldn't have died unless it was perfect beforehand. And I was like, that definitely sort of seems like something that he would have tried to do.
Some of the music he picked for the funeral was Uptown Funk. It's unexpected, isn't it?
Like
his turn in the Texas music videos as well.
Yes.
Dogma, you mentioned, was the other comedy thing he did. He plays an angel there, doesn't he?
He does, Metatron. And like, it was just so good. And like, when Kevin Smith was sort of thinking about like who could we ask, he heard that Alan Rickman was a big fan of Chasing Amy, so he was like, oh, I wonder, can we get Alan Rickman to like play this role? And the minute he sent them the script, he goes, are you going to stay faithful to the script, and are the wings going to be real or CGI? And they were the only two questions that he was asked, and they became like long term friends afterwards as well, to the point that like Kevin would like be in the UK and Alan would ring him and he'd be like, oh, you're in my country, I'm going to bring you to lunch. And then if Alan was in the States, he'd be like, I'm in your country, you're taking me to lunch. And that's kind of how their friendship blossomed as well.
People are remembering him in The Guardian, where you quoted Sigourney Weaver from, and they're talking about he constantly brought them to dinner, and when they'd offer to pay, he would say, no, I'm paying, two words,
Harry Potter.
Sweeney Todd, the musical, singing opposite Johnny Depp.
Yes, and it's something that, again, it was a surprising turn because he wasn't exactly known for being a singer. As much as we know him for his voice, he was like, oh, no, I'm not a singer. Like, a vocal coach in drama school once told him that his voice sounded like it was coming out of the back end of a drain pipe, which... Yeah, even as the judge, you're kind of like, yeah, but it suited the role really well because the judge is supposed to be a little bit kind of like villainous and grovelly and not really like blasting out all these like powerful notes kind of thing. So the kind of like more understated version that he gave, I actually thought worked really, really well. And it was actually the first time he'd collaborated with Tim Burton, who, and then he went later went on to work with him on the Alice in Wonderland films.
Oh, he was the voice, which I think was one of the last things he did.
It was, yeah.
Was he the caterpillar?
He was the caterpillar, yes.
Some memories coming in. Galaxy Quest is his best as Mark in Louth Village. They're jealous of you for meeting Alan Rickman.
Oh,
that's another one.
I know a lot of people were at the time, and then unfortunately, I got a name for myself as to being the Grim Reaper because he passed shortly after meeting him, and then I'd also met John Olomou a couple of weeks before he passed away. So,
oh my God.
Yes, very, very unfortunate timing for me.
The stars need to stay away.
Yeah.
When Alan Rickman was here in Dublin, says this texter, starring in a play in the Abbey, he was living in the IFSC. Every afternoon when he was going to the theatre, he called into my shop, bought three cards, wrote them and posted them to his life partner at the time and his wife Rima before his death. That's from Bridget. And it was a Frank McGuinness play, an Ibsen drama, a version of the Ibsen drama with Lindsay Duncan and Fiona Shaw,
oh, wow.
Which was in 2010. Which then went on to Broadway. This person says, I know it's December when I hear the line, now I have a machine gun, ho, 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 Hans Gruber. Someone says, two films to watch, Truly Madly Deeply, written and directed by Anthony Minghella. I think you're like me, I've never seen this film.
It's actually one of the few films that I hadn't seen, but you know what? It has such a fun little tidbit that I just thought was absolutely hilarious. So, of course, it's a bit like the film Ghost, but not Ghost. So the Alan's character passes away, but because his partner is so distraught, he decides to try and come back and visit her. But he's a ghost.
Yeah.
And they were quite a musical couple.
Oh, right.
So you've got Juliet Stevenson. She plays the piano, but Alan's character was a cellist. But yeah. He did try and learn how to play.
Did he?
But in the actual film, he's just doing like the bow part and it's another hand is doing the rest of it.
Really?
But the guy had to actually like put his hand up through his armpit
That's
in order to get the shot. So it's hilarious. I was like, that is so funny because you probably wouldn't even notice it to watch the film. But now knowing it, I'm like, I know, like when I do go watch it, I'm going to try
exactly,
and find
that's
it.
That's all I'm going to be doing.
Yeah.
Watching that poor man crouch down behind. Olivia Fahey, a pleasure as always. Thanks for talking to us. Freelance and entertainment journalist, our screen queen, I like to call you. And sure, we'll see you again soon. Instagram, ToxiColly2.
Yes, indeed.
I'll never get used to saying
yeah.
that. And Alan Rickman, 10 years. May he rest in peace.